Give me just a second here, Rocky, please.
The second half of the Ten Commandments.
16 through 21. It was just basically, you know, the Ten Commandments.
Okay, chapter 5, 16 through 21.
Yes, sir. Verses 16 through 21, yeah. Because it's the idea of love God, love neighbor. And we're getting in the idea of love neighbor. That's what I'm trying to bring out. Okay. I think maybe we're there. All right. We've just finished the Beatitudes. And we're talking about those who are fit to be citizens in the kingdom. Jesus is preaching the gospel of the kingdom here. That was his message as he taught in chapter 3 as well. And we had blessed are the poor in spirit. That's where it started out. We have to recognize our spiritual poverty. Blessed are those who mourn. We got to recognize where we're bereaved because we've been separated from God due to death. We blessed are the gentle. We're so gentle that we completely submit to God's will. And then we come to the point where blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. And we talked about it has to be a living, working faith. You know, has to be where it's God's grace, but we have to see it living in our lives as well. Blessed are the merciful. And here's this idea that people are to extend mercy. It's not that God gives it to you, because the first thing is always what you do, and then the second part is what you receive as far as a blessing. Blessed are the pure in heart. And we talk about people, this idea that we're double-minded, but we're single-minded. We're singly devoted to Jesus Christ in each one of these steps. We're looking at the Beatitudes and fixing to open up chapter 12 here. So we're just kind of going a little review here. And then blessed are the peacemakers. And I understand that if it's a progression, then it's this idea you've done these other things and you're so devoted to God you want to extend mercy, so you're a person who will announce salvation. Okay, you've made peace with God already previously in this, and now you're at the point where you're doing this, and then it just naturally comes to the next one. Because of this, you're going to be persecuted for the sake of righteousness. You're going to be doing things which are proper toward God, and Jesus lets you know beforehand. He's being upfront with you. He's being honest with you, and he's telling you, if you do this, you're going to be persecuted in this life. The persecution comes in many ways. It may be simple things as insults, but then it may be persecution. And then it says, be glad and rejoice, for your reward in heaven is great. Then he talks about, and I wish I could just put on recorder what Gary had to say, having done all these things, it makes you fit to be able to say that you are the salt of the earth. In verse 13, you are the light of the world. Verse 14. And verse 16, so let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Now Jesus is coming and he's saying these things. We've already had a lesson on verses 14 through 20. But just to kind of bring this into our next lesson, you know, he's talking about now in verse 17 and through 20, he talks about there's been some said things likely said about him, how he's against the law and everything. And there's even at a point, if we look at a chronology and if we compare this with Luke, that there's people actually out to kill him by now. And so there's been some things said about him. So he's going to turn right back and turn around and say, it said, I did not come, verse 17, to abolish the law and prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. He is the Messiah. He's going to be able to say what he is. Okay, and verse 19, whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. He's setting up some things for what he's fixing to say and what we're going to talk about here in lesson 12. And then he says this all-important thing for us to understand what he's fixing to say here in verse 21 is what he said in verse 20. But I say to you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So he's going to, this is going to be a main point for us to be able to understand what he says here in this very next verse. And this is where we get to our lesson in verses 21 through 26, where it says, you have heard. And now I'm going to say this point here. Now, in the past, it wasn't such a big deal if you didn't do your lessons. But from here on out, because we're going to be covering more material, it'd be better if you look at your lessons, even if I got the typos. You know, maybe you'll figure out and help me out here where I've really messed up, like Rocky did, where he showed me. I had it wrote down here, but I've got to say it was 16 through 1 in Deuteronomy chapter 5. The point being is you look at your lessons because we're going to be covering more ground. And if you haven't looked at your lessons, you might miss out on some of this. You really should have, hopefully, have read at least read the verses before we come to class. In verse 21, and this is where we begin, you have heard said that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court, and whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court, and whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on your way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid the last cent. Paid up the last cent. Okay. Now we get into our lesson here. This idea the ancients were told. Jesus' audience was used to hearing the old law, of course, being a Jewish audience here. And murder was wrong. We don't need to go to Exodus 20, verse 13, and Deuteronomy 5, 17. It's the sixth commandment, you shall not murder. Okay? Those who murdered would be condemned and tried. Let's look at Numbers chapter 35. We can all understand this fact, but for judgment's sake and helping us to understand when we talk about this next one in Romans 13, it'll help to see that God expects judgment. Numbers 35, 30 through 31. If anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death at the evidence of witnesses, but no person shall be put to death on the testimony of one witness. Moreover, you shall not take ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. So, seems here when Jesus said in verse 20, you know, you should, he's saying these things, you should not commit murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to court. He's saying things that are just in the Old Testament. Look at Romans chapter 13. It has that appearance. Romans chapter 13. Verses 3 and 4. For rulers are not a cause. Well, let's go back to verse 1. Every person is to be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those who exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not the cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same, for it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing, for it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Jesus is not saying he has a problem here with murder or what he's saying concerning the old law. And there's not a problem here with this his teaching as well. The problem is going to be with the Pharisees and the way they went and corrupted these passages or the usage of these passages. When we read, you know, well, we don't have to go back and read all that. I think we got work that from memory. That he talked about anger. He talked about hard words being said and everything. And what the Pharisees had done is they, so long as you didn't commit the act of murder, they could do just about everything in between. They could dream of murder. They could plan murder. They could speak slander and sedition against a person. They could verbally abuse a person. They could mar the reputation, just ruin a person's life in that respect, because they had that authority. They were people who were looked up at and upon. And if they wanted to do that, and if they wanted to just ruin you as your character, they could do that. And it must have been that they had done this. So long as no blood was spilt. You know, it's like the guy who runs over in you in basketball and then picks you up and he says, no harm, no foul, right? You know, he just knocked you down and everything, but he's going to be the one to tell you no harm, no foul. And that was the way they looked at it. As long as you didn't quite do the murder itself, you could just about get away with anything in between here. So Jesus is not having a problem with what he was saying about the sixth commandment, about murder. It was about the Pharisees' misuse of this. And we get that, of course, from verse 20, the prior verse before he goes into this. And your righteousness must exceed that of the Pharisees. Everything is just falling in line, in order, in this Sermon on the Mount. And that is what it has to do with here. And we see in you have heard that, or the ancients were told, or this, it was said. It said different ways, but six times in chapter 5, verse 21, verse 27, if you're concerned, 31, 33, 38, and 43. And then the next verse after that, Jesus' response says, but I say unto you. Yes, sir. Do you have a point?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, go backing up a tiny bit to verse 20, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees. The scribes and the Pharisees were the spiritual leaders.
Exactly.
And I can see the people saying, well, if I have to be more righteous than the scribes and Pharisees, that's impossible. They are the elite. They're the ones who...
They're the rabbi.
They're the ones.
Yes.
And I cannot be more righteous than them. You know, that's not possible. And here he's explaining, you know, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. This, and then I can see them saying, what do you mean? How? How can I be more righteous than the scribes and Pharisees? And he's pointing out the contradictions in the scribes and Pharisees and the old law and what that is. And he's, every time he says, have you heard, is another example of how they can be more righteous than the scribes and Pharisees.
Yeah, that's each time. And that's why I've just called this one anger. And that's all it is. And they would allow that just as long as you didn't commit murder. Rocky, did I see your hand?
John, the point you're making here are really, really important, because these passages can really be misinterpreted.
Exactly.
So the setting you're laying down here is critical. Just to reemphasize some of the points you made, Jesus is not in any way changing the law.
No.
Not changing the law. This is nothing any different. And where it says, you know, you have heard. Well, where are the people hearing this from? They're hearing it from the Pharisees and scribes. And so the Pharisees and scribes are teaching these things, but their behavior is not in accordance with what they're teaching. In each one of these scenarios, there's a whole, you know, as you go through the remainder of the lesson, it's important for us to understand what was the Pharisees' problem. You hit around, you know, here you say you don't murder, but yet they could do all these other things to the brother as if, I mean, they were authorized that. So for us to see how our righteousness needs to exceed them, we have to understand what were the Pharisees doing that Jesus is going after them for.
Right.
And once you get all that kind of in your mind, then things start falling in place.
Yeah, it does. And it helps to understand all this. And it all stems off, as both of them have said, verse 20, within our context of that. Your righteousness must exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. And then he just falls into line. And as Gary said, you know, there's some, you know, these were their rabbis. These were their teachers. And I'm sure, you know, Jesus has already said so many shocking things. And here's another one. And then he goes on to prove, because these were the things that they would have heard. They would have seen. And teaching that they would have experienced. To them, it would have been more understanding. For us, we have to really look into it, because they would have taught a doctrine somewhat of hatred. And it's not a contrast, as you see here, C2, between the law of Moses, it is written, and the gospel, but between these rabbis, their teachers, the ones who, you know, we say the scribes and Pharisees, the rabbis were the teacher. Jesus was called by them often rabbi, and then they try to trick him or something like that. But they had their teachers, of course. This was a term that they used, and their teachers would teach certain things, and we're going to find out they're contrary even to the old law and to the gospel of the kingdom. Yes, sir?
I was going to say, one thing that's interesting is that he starts off with anger, and when you read verse 20, what would the Pharisees and the scribes' reaction be to what he's saying?
Oh, I'm sure they're, yeah.
He immediately picks up that point that, you know, the anger is, and he uses that as an example of what's going to happen. But their response is going to be anger.
Exactly.
And they do murder. They murder him.
Yeah. Oh, exactly right. And, it's they're going to murder him and a few other people behind him as well. We have a problem with this if we look at these words, and we're going to see these words, fool, rocka. Now, we don't have a problem with that. We don't. I can't remember last time I called anybody rocka, you know, but we do burst out. And let's not leave these at these words, these simple words. Now, we got to remember this is just an illustration Jesus is using. We don't have a church where somebody, Gary said, John, you're a fool. You're not as smart as me. I should be teaching this class. And I say, well, you know, that chair over there is smarter than me too. But you don't hear it complaining. And then, okay, well, but we're going to take Gary out there and we're going to put the elders up and we're going to put them in court. We don't do that. Jesus is just having an illustration about this name-calling stuff and everything. And he's showing that this idea of anger and hatred. And let's not limit this just to these few words, okay, as we're going through here, in case we forget to say this. This is intended at anger, okay? But we have a problem with this ourselves, because turn to Ephesians chapter 4, okay? Because it looks like Jesus is just totally condemning this, you know, saying these words. But when we read Ephesians chapter 4, Paul in verse 26, he just simply says, we know this, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Paul separates being angry from sin, but we would look at it in a sense like, well, Jesus just taking people to court for being angry, you know, right off and everything. But if we look at it, we got to understand what it is Jesus is saying, okay, and what he means by this. These words are just they're murderous words, they're murderous speech, and there's intent behind them. And then he's going to talk about. I'll just go ahead and mention some things. He's going to talk about behind this, so I don't forget this point later. What if you have offended somebody? Now, this is what you do. Okay? So, that's the point. And that's going to be the same thing as what Paul says here. In a sense, he does separate it. We do get angry. Okay? But we have to not let the sun go down on our wrath. We have to have anger management. Okay? We're going to go to the best example in Genesis chapter 4 in a little bit with Cain. But that's exactly what God told Cain to manage it. You know, it's crouching at your door. Okay, but we want to get to that point when we're talking about some of these things here in a little bit. So what Jesus is telling is basically the same thing as what Paul's saying. Because he tells you after this how to deal with that. But he's talking about here about, and I'm just calling it murderous speech for just not a better way to talk, not having a better word for that. And I believe Jesus is rebuking any and all anger not properly handled, if we put all this together. He didn't say any momentary anger is sin, rather that he expected exactly what Paul, any anger not quickly and properly resolved, can lead to murder. It is condemned and liable before God's court. When he talks about all these courts and everything, it's just simply saying that, you know, if you're guilty for man's court, you're guilty for God's court. God knows all these things. It's not saying that, okay, you fools, not quite as bad as Rocka, okay? It's just saying all this is wrong. Anger extended at somebody, to demean somebody, to tear somebody down, to belittle them, whatever the reason may be. You may be prejudiced against them. I just don't like Hispanics. Y'all sit over there, you know. Or I don't like Asians, so we closed the door and didn't let any in. You know, so I'm going to talk bad about them. And we catch ourselves sometimes doing these things. and we group people together that we might mistreat somebody, okay, because they're in this select group. And that's why prejudice is such a bad thing. That's why prejudging, which all that word means, is such a bad thing. Whatever, you know, if, you know, women drivers or, you know, just whatever it may be. We have to be careful about those things. Any type of anger. This word anger, I've got it defined here. A strong feeling of displeasure and belligerence aroused by a real or a supposed wrong. Now, a lot of times it is, most often it is a real wrong. We are angered by something somebody has done to us, or somebody's angered by something we've done to them. But sometimes there's that supposed wrong, too. And that's when you think about Cain and Abel. You know, you think about that. He didn't kill God, did he? You know, who was the one? Well, we're going to get to that in a second. Matter of fact, go ahead and turn to Genesis chapter 4. But, you know, sometimes just plain old jealousy enters into the picture. And sometimes that's why we haul off and say the things we do. And I'll be the first to admit, I struggle with this. I struggle with the quick temper. And I really do. I don't know if it's... I can blame it. Maybe my father was that way, you know. But there is some baggage we might carry with us. But what does God tell us here in Genesis chapter 4, verses 5 through 8? For Cain and his offering, he had no regard. Talking about God. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. You know, you could just see it on him. And the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will your countenance not be lifted up? Okay, God said he's angry. Okay, he's giving some advice here. You know, you can do better and feel better. Notice here, and if you do not do well, sin is crouching at your door. He's just giving him every warning he can here. And he's saying sin is crouching at your door. Just like be angry and do not sin. Okay, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Okay, he's telling him in the very next verse, and here's the main point, but you must master it. We're going to get angry. We're going to have these things, each issue Jesus talks about, we must master it. Of course, we know what happened. He went on and he killed his brother the very next day. But we see he had no regard for his offering, and he didn't. It was God who had no regard for his offering, but out of jealousy, he killed his brother. Okay? So out of a supposed wrong, in our definition, we can see that's true. And we're often that way. You know, we just angry, and maybe that was the way with these scribes and Pharisees. Had really somebody made them mad? Or did they just look down upon other people? Don't know. Either way. But whatever it was.
Jesus did talk to them in Luke. You know, you were talking about how chronological it really is, you know. And, I mean, they have been busy being hypocrites.
Oh, exactly.
And taking the widows' homes and being,
exactly.
Not merciful, you right. know, to the thing. So their deeds were evil, just like Cain's.
Yeah, and the majority of them.
Yeah,
right.
What that he's talking about.
Right.
And they were godly, not godly.
Exactly.
You know, Cain gave the wrong offering because mm-hmm. of ungodly. And their pride always got in the way. And they were jealous. You know, they were jealous of Jesus,
exactly.
and they were jealous of others trying to take their power. And so then they got angry. So Jesus is pointing this, you know, right to them, and because they're guilty of all of that.
Yeah, and that's exactly. I don't even have to go over that later. That's the whole thing. They were jealous of Jesus, and they were jealous already at that time. And I won't have to even say that then. We can see that right here, right now. But hopefully, we as citizens of the kingdom, okay. And understanding all this and seeing the teaching concerning this, you know, we are poor in spirit. We've mourned over our sins. Now, we're gently submitting ourselves to God. And hopefully we can remove selfishness, because that's what it's all about when you're often angered. It's just something that's upset you. They didn't lay a physical hand usually on you. It's just usually you just, something's got you, and it's just tightening up on you, and it's just about ready to blow, and you're about like a volcano. And look at James 1:19, and that's, you can't do the Sermon on the Mount without going to James. And there'll be a few verses I skip here and there, but not too many from James. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear. Now, that's verse 23. For if anyone is a hearer of the word, quick to hear, he's not talking about, you know, you just should be listening to everybody. He's talking about hearing God's word. But notice how, here's the word where they put and in. And I believe the people who did the New American Standard, you know, it's in italics and they've added it. This is one place where it really helps me. Slow to speak and slow to anger. We got the people who exercise restraint. We are people who need to exercise self-control. I am a person, and I'm in at work, I'm in a spot where people get mad and angry, their lights are out and all that kind of stuff, and then they say mean things to me, and at times I go back at them. And then later I'm going, God forgive me, I why did I do that, you know? And I think many of us are driving down the road every day, and somebody cuts you off. And, you know, hopefully you're not cussing them or flipping them off, as it's called, or whatever, but you get angry, and you might have called them an idiot or something similar. We're talking about anger, not just a few different words here, okay? So we need to, and like I say, these are things I struggle with. Galatians 6:1, brethren, if anyone is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. If we have sinned, if we've angered someone, or if somebody comes to us, you know, we need to go to them in private and with a spirit of gentleness and talk to them about these things. Not allowing the sun to go down on our anger. We don't just let it simmer. We don't just let it boil. If there is a problem, what should we do? Take care of it. And often for a guy, I don't know, maybe for a girl, that's a hard thing to do, you know, because eating a humble pie is hard for us. But we are to be merciful peacemakers. And that's the whole point to learning all these things about the Beatitudes. If we've learned the Beatitudes, if we've applied the Beatitudes, we'll be able to apply everything Jesus has to say here. Almost everything's going to fall in. Well, if you were what he said earlier, then you'll be able to control anger. Righteousness begins in the heart. We've talked about that over and over. 1 John 3:15. Let's see. We're right near there. 1 John 3:15. Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Okay? And you just hatred. You want eternal life? You better manage it. You better be able to work. Remember, he said, you must do this. He told Cain. Sin is crouching at the door. This was a thing he had to do. Let's see where I'm at here. I'm sorry, I lost my spot here in my lesson. That was, what verse did I just read?
3:15.
1 John 3:15, and that in my lesson is...
E1.
Wow, I'm all the way down there. Well, I'm moving on. I think I skipped a few things. But, I have just put a few verses together there. The law of Moses condemned hatred. If anybody's late, that shouldn't say the law of Moses condemned by God. So if you're on E2, and if anybody walked in late, I want to make sure I get that straight. Leviticus 19. Verse 17. Let's see. Oh, 19. Okay. You shall not hate your fellow countryman in your heart. You shall surely remove... You shall surely reprove your neighbor, but you shall not incur sin because of him. Notice here the next verse. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Okay? And like I had earlier, Deuteronomy 5:21, 16-21, Rocky asked me if that was right. It should have been 16-21. And it's just the idea. The first four were love God in the Ten Commandments. The last six were love your neighbor. Okay? And that should have been, thank you, Rocky, for pointing that out to me. That should be verses 16-21. And we've got this next point here, pure of heart. We've read this Matthew, 23:25-26, and it's just this idea where he talked about the Pharisees, not just to clean the outside of the cup, but they were told to clean the inside as well. It isn't just about how you look. It isn't just about how you appear to everybody. It should come from the heart, the inside. We've looked at Proverbs. I've got it wrote down here, 4:23. Y'all know this when I read it. Watch over your hearts with all diligence, for from it flows the springs of life. Some of your versions, I believe, say the issues of life. You want to look at what a person is, what their heart is about? Just sit back and watch them. See what they do, what their actions are. And this is the way we are. And this is how we are told to judge people. And we'll see that later on as well. We're going to observe people. That's the only thing we have to go on. Jesus, of course, could look right in there. He could see if there was hypocrisy. He could see if you was play acting. But this is what we do. But ourselves, with all diligence, we have to watch over our heart. We have to manage anger. Now turn to Matthew chapter 12. Let's look at that one. Because this talks about exactly what Jesus is talking about here. It talks about what we say. Of course, we could have went to James 2, or James 3. We've got a little bit of that. Matthew chapter 12, verses 33-37. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, say what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good. The evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I say to you that every careless word, this is a scary verse to me. I say to you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. Now here's how well we need to master it. This is why we should, not let the sun go down on our anger. This is why we should do all these things that we can control it, so we can control what we say. I've got James 3. I've got it written here. But no one can tame the tongue. It is restless, evil, and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. For the same mouth come both blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. And that brings us to our next point here. Here within our mouth, or coming out of our mouth, we'll praise God. We'll be singing songs. We'll be leading in prayer. Or we'll, in our hearts, be saying a prayer even. But out of our very mouth, and then we'll turn around, we'll belittle men. We'll say evil things about them. We'll not control our tongue. And this is exactly what James is talking about. And this is what we're talking about when we look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 23-24. And I'm just going to read these real quick and kind of refresh our mind. Therefore, if you presenting your offering at the altar, and therefore remember your brother has something against you. Now, I'm going to look at this passage like you've offended your brother because of that verse. Okay? There's others who look at it either way. But then it says, leave your offering before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. And so he's saying there's just some steps here we got to do. we're what's the purpose of sacrificing, you know, coming here to worship, is to be reconciled to God. But if we've got a problem, we need to go to our brother. We need to stop right there. We need to clear up that problem, because it's going to do us no good to go worship for God with hate in our heart. And that's the whole point. Okay? And, you know, I've got this point about here, husband and wife relationship as well, and I'm going to pick at the husbands because we're getting to that time point, because it's in 1 Peter chapter 3. Because it specifically says what we're talking about here. And, you know, it's exactly what Jesus is talking about. He says, you know, you got to be careful. You can't be just the hypocrite. You've got to be a person of action. You've got to be doing the right thing. And after he's talking about how the wives are to be subject to their husbands and all these things, and he turns around on the husbands. You husbands, in the same way, verse 7, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of grace of life. So that's what you're supposed to do, okay, husbands, or we're supposed to. So, why? So that your prayers will not be hindered. Here's another instance, exactly what Jesus is saying. Oh, I'm going to sit here and mistreat Elvira? You know, I'm just going to knock her down, slap her around as a weaker person, or I'm going to do it by way of word, just as these Pharisees were doing. You know, you fool, Raca, or whatever. Not, like I say, not limiting to these words. You know, you can sure knock somebody down. Now, how in the world is God going to sit there and listen to my prayer? And that's what I've got these other verses here of Psalm 66:18. If I regard weakness in my heart, the Lord will not hear it. Okay? This is a principle that's been taught from the Old Testament to the New Testament as well. If you're not righteous in the way you deal with people, God is not going to deal with you in a loving and tender way as well. And specifically here in 1 Peter 3:7 concerning our wives. But, you know, this would not be a problem if we're poor in spirit. This would not be a problem if we're gentle. If we just learn the Beatitudes and apply these things, that's why the Beatitudes are so, so important, then we'll have removed all this self. Okay, because that's what the Beatitudes are teaching us. It's taking ourselves and laying ourselves before Jesus, and then you're wanting to be righteous, and then you're letting His Word guide you. Okay? And Jesus is guiding right now. And He has to do this, because these people were taught by these rabbis, and they were taught you shouldn't murder, but you could hate. So, this is a necessary thing. Our last verse here, now I've got it written down here, or two verses, 25 and 26. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer, and you will be thrown in prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid the last cent. Now I look at that, and for me to understand it, and maybe somebody can help this better, but it's like, you know, until you pay the last cent, it's likely that you owe this other person. And maybe it's a debt, some money. But I don't believe Jesus is using this in a money debt type situation. He's telling you, if you owe somebody, similar to our last passage, if you've done something wrong against them, you owe them, hey, I'm sorry, forgive me, what I've done to you was oh so wrong. Yes, sir?
John, you were talking about here in the point, we see about when they teach us how to be angry. Now, I think, keeping with the context Jesus is talking about, it's something in our hearts that we have this, like you said, anger or hatred. It's not just, oh, you know, I remember that brother so-and-so. Maybe I ought to go to try and do something. It's not just that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, we can't control what sometimes people feel towards us.
Exactly.
That's the idea of, you know, like, oh, yeah. No, I really hate that person. I'm going to try to worship God and this unresolved issue.
Right, right. Well, our last verse there, since you brought up that point, Romans 12:8, and we talked about peacemakers. And to coincide with what you're saying, Craig, Romans 12:8 says, "18." No wonder I'm doing that again. I've got 18 written there too. If possible, And this goes with what you're saying. So far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. You're right. There's times we're not going to be able to, maybe our heart, we've done something, even if we go back and repent or something like that. And it may be somebody out there in the world and everything, and they just turn around and knock you down. But then again, you know what? If you done something against them, you probably got it coming to some extent. You just take it meekly, humbly, and just go on your way. But anyway, we can't be people who hold grudges. And I'm talking about when we're in the wrong or where we're in the right. Okay? Either way, we can't be people who refuse to reconcile with our brethren. That's what the problem was with the Pharisees. They just thought they were better than other people. They wanted to be seen as better. And they, as Linda said, they used people, even to the point that, what did they do to Jesus Christ? They were jealous of him. They had him killed. Okay. And if we're people who are angry people, then we can fall into the same fate as them. All right. We'll just... we have Sunday off. That is correct, right? We got the meeting? Okay, so we'll be here Wednesday night, next lesson. Lesson number 13. Like I say, look at it.